continue our conversation on I Vote, We Vote, No Vote, the power of the ballot box. It's no secret that this presidential election has brought out just about every range of emotion in many voters. Love, hate, frustration, exasperation, passion, fear, hope, and the list goes on and on. With just a few days to go before early voting begins right here in the DMV, political observers are predicting a record turnout. With so much at stake, we believe it's important that you have a full grasp of the political process and what it really means for you and me. To give us a true perspective of the election process from the popular vote to the Electoral College, we begin tonight with Dr. Kamesha Grant, Howard University political science professor. And certainly we want you to be part of this conversation. Join the conversation at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Join us on Twitter at WHURFM using the hashtag RockTheVoteWHUR. Dr. Grant, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's do a little civics 101 here. Let's talk about the popular vote versus the Electoral College vote. Confusing to a lot of people, even though you hear a lot about it in the news. What's the difference?
So your popular vote is the vote that each individual gets to cast themselves. So when you personally go into the ballot box on Tuesday, November 8th at the latest, or at some point before then to fill out your ballot, you are participating in the popular vote. The Electoral College vote is the vote that comes together from various states to determine who will be the president of the United States. So this is a fight that goes back to the founding of the nation about who gets to participate in politics and whether, honestly, the American public was smart enough to make the decision. So one argument was that they weren't smart enough to make the decision about who should participate, and we should have an election where the House of Representatives decides the presidency. That didn't last long, and we ended up with a situation where we have this kind of balance between the popular vote or the people making a decision about who gets to be the president and sharing that responsibility with the House of Representatives through the Electoral College. So there are 538 electors altogether throughout the nation. You need 270 Electoral College votes to win. The electors exist in all 50 of the states plus DC and some territories. What happens is that your Electoral College votes are counted after the election occurs, and the electors are selected before then by a slate for the political parties. Once we know who wins in your state in all but two elections, the winner gets all the Electoral College votes of that state. The number of Electoral College votes varies based on the population of the state, and it's equal to the number of people in the congressional delegation of a state. So I made a note here for you all. If you're listening in Maryland, your number of electors is 10. If you're listening in Virginia, your number is 13. So that'll be the number of people who vote. So what happens is that you cast your vote, your popular vote, and then sometime between when you cast your vote in November and about middle December, your electors get together and meet. The governor of the state certifies the election for our system of checks and balances, and then they send that certification off to the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives meets on January 6th in order to determine who will actually be the presidential candidate for your for the United States of America and who won your state.
But see, here's the problem with all of that. You know, if I'm a novice coming in to the voting process, 18 years old, 19 mm-hmm. years old, and I vote for my candidate, and then I start hearing Electoral College and somebody is making a decision and looking at the history, and maybe I'm not smart enough to do this, why should I believe that my vote matters?
So you are absolutely smart enough to influence the political process. I think that people should know that first of all, you're smart enough to influence it, and then we have like information everywhere. Mm-hmm. So there are many ways to get smarter about it. If there are questions that you have, you can read Twitter, Facebook, you can read newspapers, you can watch television. So there are lots of ways to get involved and get informed. But in terms of the individual vote and how it comes together, the electors and the governor of the state can only make or will only make decisions about who gets to be the president on the basis of your popular vote. So the person who gets the majority in the popular vote for your state will get the electors or the Electoral College vote of your state. So the Electoral College is not like making some independent decisions about
it. It's not a star chamber that's
right.
making decisions
right.
above
so
it.
So it's not like a magical place where people go and decide what the world is going to be without you. They decide who's going to be the president based on who wins the popular vote in these states.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We continue our conversation during the special broadcast, I Vote, We Vote, No Vote, The Power of the Ballot Box. Let's go to Ben. Ben, calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. What's on your mind?
Hi, let's just have a quick comment. I hear all this talk about the lesser of two evils and the choices between Democrat and Republicans. And also hear a conversation about being informed and that this is the most important election of your life. I mean, I've heard that every election cycle. My question is this. How can you be informed when you do not acknowledge that there are four candidates running for the president of the United States? And even if you don't agree, why isn't it that we don't have these conversations about the platforms of all four candidates where everyone can have a real informed debate or critique of all of the candidates and make an informed decision? And it seems to me it's just like a talking point or people are just saying things, making these comments as if they actually know what they're talking about when they only get apparently half of the story because they never talk about the other two. And I'm not advocating for any of the four candidates. I'm not telling you to choose. But if we're going to have a conversation about it. And I'm talking about not just the average voter person. I'm talking about the professors and the politicians who are so-called experts.
Well, hold on. Ben, let me see if we can get that question answered. And I'd like to start with the issue of why, for example, we didn't see the other two candidates on the debate stage for the first presidential debate or the second presidential debate, because there are issues of percentages, right?
Right. There are issues of percentages, and there is an election commission, a presidential debate commission that has rules about what you must do or be in order to make it to the stage. So that will be one. They didn't meet the criteria, which would be why they didn't make it to the stage.
Because it's supposed to be 10% at least, or maybe 15%. Is that what it is?
Of the vote in the primary election.
Exactly.
In order to make it to the stage. And it's not the case that a third party candidate hasn't. So if you were paying attention, for example, or know anything about, like, I think 92 when Ross Perot is running, he gets to participate because he had a substantial percentage in the primary election. In terms of why people are only talking about two and talking about the lesser of two evils, our political system is based on a majority. Like, if you win a majority of votes, 50% of votes plus one, then you win the election, which inevitably in many instances leads to a place where we have two parties participating in the electoral system. For the conversation we're having about national elections, that ends up most times being the Democrats and Republicans. But if you lived in Chicago, we might be talking about different factions of the Democratic Party. Or if you lived in New York, we could be talking about different factions of the Democratic Party. Or maybe some places in the South, we're talking about different factions within the Republican Party. So it is the case that there is space for people outside the major parties, but I think that depends on where you are in the nation.
Ben, thank you so much for your question. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be joined by author and activist Dr. Julianne Malveaux and Chris Prudhomme with Vote America. And of course, Dr. Grant will also still be with us. Stay with us. I Vote, We Vote, No Vote. A special broadcast. We'll be back in a moment.
Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum as we take a look at the power of the vote. We call it I Vote, We Vote, No Vote. In this segment, we're going to take a look at the issue of not voting. What's behind this growing number of Americans saying they plan to sit this election out? My guests are Dr. Julianne Malveaux, author and activist, Chris Prudhomme, president of Vote America, and Dr. Kamisha Grant. She continues with us, Howard University political science professor. Let's start talking about voting blocks for just a bit. Dr. Malveaux, we saw the Bernie Sanders protest, millennials not wanting to vote. They appear to have calmed down some. But what are the impacts of so many threatening to sit out the election?
Sitting out the election, first of all, means that they refuse or choose not to have a voice in the future of our country. I mean, if they vote for third parties, that's fine. But to say I'm not going to vote means that I abdicate my power. I'm not going to use the argument. Millennials tell me they don't want to hear we old heads talking about all the people who died for the right to vote. So we don't have to talk about the people who died. Let's talk about the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about down ballot issues. If you live in a city like Washington, D.C., if you live in San Francisco, wherever you live, your city councilors make a difference in the quality of your life. Your school board members make a difference in the quality of the schools that your young people go to, as well as the books that they get. You have school board members who are voting that our stuff, our classics, cannot be taught. So I don't know how many school systems Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye is not taught because people consider it obscene. So, and in Texas, you have the textbooks with happy slaves. I mean, they have a whole chapter about happy slaves. So
and workers.
Yes.
Right. Workers instead of slaves, for
exactly.
example.
So if you choose not to vote, you choose not to participate, and you have no right to complain about outcomes. Now, with this presidential, I do understand at some point what's going on. You have young people who put their whole hearts and souls into Bernie Sanders, and they don't like Hillary Clinton. But what my challenge with the millennials is the lack of history that they bring to the table. I've been voting since 1972, and let me tell you, I have never been as excited about any candidate except for Reverend Jackson and President Obama as these folks were about Bernie Sanders. I wasn't excited about Jimmy Carter. I voted for him because mm-hmm. that's what I was supposed to do. Warren McGovern, I voted for him. You know, I wasn't excited about Mondale. But if you are a citizen, you vote. And so I get to be a little bit frustrated when folks say, I'm not going to vote because I don't like the options. Well, you're going to get one of the options, and you're going to get one of the major party options. It's going to be Hillary Rodham Clinton, or it's going to be Donald Trump. That's how it is. And so take your power. And then for those who don't like the process, see, people pop up and say, I don't like the process. They say that during the election year.
Right.
My political scientist sister, if this is the process you don't like, let's start working on it now.
Right.
So that in 2020, maybe there's a third party that's stronger. Maybe there are more options available. But you can't just sit up and say, oh, gee, I don't like it. But it has a tremendous impact, Harold, because I think that when you don't vote, you are essentially abdicating. And as close as this election was until certain people opened their mouth and decided that mm-hmm. They like to grab genitalia.
well, there's another show. You that's a good point to stop that conversation. Mr. Prudhomme, this is for you. Now, President Obama has also heard, you know, those no voices. I want you to listen to this, and then I want you to react on the other side.
If we don't vote, we can go backwards. There have been times in our history where, you know, right after the Civil War, everybody was feeling pretty good about, you know, the course we were on. And then suddenly, next thing you knew, Jim Crow was in place. And, you know, the few African-Americans who had been elected, suddenly they were purged. And suddenly people couldn't vote again. And, you know, history doesn't always just go forward. It can go sideways, and sometimes it can go backwards. Okay. And if you do not vote, you're voting for Trump.
Obviously, President Obama and a conversation that he had with Steve Harvey. Are millennials impatient, too impatient, you know, to be comfortable with this process? And is that impatience, if indeed they are, is that a plus or a minus?
I don't necessarily think that they are impatient. I don't think that they understand the entire spectrum of the political process. It's immensely complicated. It's a process that's just pretty much overcomplicated. And I think I'll give you a prime example. One of our biggest presidential town halls we did was with Senator Sanders. The responses from that was overwhelming. Out of all the 9 candidates that we did, he was the one that obviously, to your point earlier, Professor, resonated the best. I think young people just don't care about the overall political technicalities, all the issues. They care about things that make sense to them. This process is not straightforward. It's not simplistic at all. It's overcomplicated.
Because millennials, a lot of these millennials are college educated, and you know, this isn't, you know, election for dummies. These are intelligent people.
Think that it's one level. I think there's different levels. Obviously, there's a certain aspect that certain people understand that are some of us who are, I don't want to say inside, but closer to certain aspects of it. But at the same time, of course, they're educated. They're very intelligent individuals. But again, people are not naive. They're look at, and again, my job was to be nonpartisan. So people don't. People are tired of the rhetoric and going around in circles and over and over again. That's, I think, is the issue. And as a matter of fact, I know it's the issue as all the candidates we've talked to. People don't want the rhetoric anymore. They don't want the circles of going around and around. They don't want that.
You know, one of the other things
I want to have Professor Grant speak, but then you can go right ahead, Dr. Melvo.
So I'll take your point about millennials being upset about, I don't know, going around and around. And I will, I guess, concede that like we come from, or I will say that I started voting in 2004. And then the next election, next presidential election is Barack Obama. And it's all about ideals and hope. Right. So we don't really have, or some of us don't have this idea that politics is sausage making. Right. And it's hard and you have to compromise and you have to give and you have to take. So to some extent, are we stressed out about the fact that it's hard or it's difficult or it takes a long time? Maybe. But this thing about politics being complicated, I just absolutely can't get down with. Like, if we have had, or of the generation that have had the internet since we were like 10, and I'm an old millennial, right? We're talking about people who knew how to work DVD players and program computers and all kind of stuff from the time they were 7 years old. I don't think there's any way that you have the capacity to learn that kind of thing and don't have the capacity to know the difference between an open and closed primary election.
Or simply pull a lever. I mean, I think one of the challenges I do think, though, is that we stopped teaching civics when we started attacking public school budgets. And so while I don't agree with you at all that it's that complicated, what I think is that
I'm not saying it's complicated.
Well, hold on, let her make her point, then you go right ahead.
But I think that we have not educationally valued civic engagement. So that one of the things that a lot of people, not only millennials, but I would say many do not understand, is that voting is not the most you can do.
Right.
Voting is literally the least you can do. I mean, I do hope, for example, that Hillary Rodham Clinton is elected. I'll say that. But my takeaway from President Obama, and you've interviewed me about my book, Are We Better Off, is we didn't push him. You will not get fed in your mama's house if you don't bring your plate to the table. So the takeaway on Hillary, if she's elected, is that we have to push her. We have to be on her like white on rice to make sure that she does what she said she was going to do. And so it's not simply, I mean, too many folks have said, you go in, you vote. Even with President Obama, they voted. There was enthusiasm. But then what do you do after that? Do you demand that he come to town hall meetings? Do you get involved at your level? I love the Black Lives Matter young people and that young man over in Baltimore who ran for mayor, DeRay. He wasn't going to win, but I think that that engagement and involvement was inspirational. And so we old heads have to really be willing to have these conversations about not the complexities, but the long run. Because as the president said, although I think there was a fair amount of historical simplification in there, but people didn't vote post-Reconstruction because they were getting lynched. Right. But I think that, as he said, you can go backwards. And we've seen backwards movement with the elimination of Title V of the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. We've seen what has happened in North Carolina, where they've taken away early voting, student voting, Sunday voting, all of those things. And so I need our millennial brothers and sisters to look at the long view and not just the short view.
Mr. Perdomo, but
they
ahead.
Can't. I will agree with you on one point about civic engagement. I 100% agree. At the same time, I think it's challenging for, and I use my words carefully when I say that, not the process is challenging, but it's difficult for them to get enthusiastic about the long-term game. Again, if we don't put emphasis, to your point, if we don't put emphasis, for example, pop culture, a lot of these celebrities and use social media and Twitter, and they go on complain, express their emotions, but a lot of them don't also actively encourage the importance of actually voting. And not just every 4 years, there's numerous things that happen on a continuous basis. We need criminal justice reform. There's obviously issues with free speech. I mean, it's an array of things. So I think this generation has to get it in their head about not just, hey, every time, you know, President of the United States, they have to understand how important city council is, and they have to, you know, U.S. attorneys, and, you know, the state legislature. These are things that issues, initiatives. Those are the type of things.
Why
that I think
is it so difficult for them to understand?
Well, again, it's not difficult.
That's why I asked my question about being patient. because I think that that is the issue. It may not be about whether or not they can or cannot understand. It is about, you know, why we can't wait.
I support impatience, though. Yeah. Like when I was a student at Florida A&M University, and a guy named Andrew Gillum was our student body president, like my sophomore year. By the time I was a senior, we decided that we were taking a seat on the Tallahassee City Council, and we got him elected to office, and he's the mayor of that town today. Mm-hmm. Like, be impatient, but just do something with that energy is what I would
say. Exactly.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Omar, calling from Silver Spring, what's on your mind?
Yes, thank you so much. This is a really important topic. I'm glad you're covering it. My concern is every election year is that everybody's focused on the potential election. Okay, no one is
I think it's going in and out.
Omar, are you there? Omar? I think we may have lost you. Omar, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Daryl. Daryl calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yes, hi. Hi, my name is Daryl.
Go right ahead.
And my concern is actually, you know, we're saddened behind so many of these millennials that say they don't want to vote. They don't realize the crucialness behind it. And they can say old head, whatever. I'm an old head married to a millennial. But my millennial partner knows the significance behind voting. Voting is very important. And like some people might say, the lesser of two evils, I stand behind Hillary Clinton 100%.
Okay.
So much of fake foolishness that Trump has been putting out there. And people are allowing it to be said, and they're allowing him to get away with it.
Okay. Daryl, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Thomas, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Just for me, Harold?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Good evening. My question is to the panel. My question is, can you explain how a candidate can win the popular vote but not win the electoral vote? And I think that happened back in 2004 with Al Gore and President Bush.
Can we get that short version again, Dr. Grant, that you explained earlier, please?
The short answer is that in some extreme instances, the number of popular votes a person gets can be more than their electoral college votes, because the electoral college votes are assigned based on their congressional delegation. So there's a different amount for each state. So if it was the case that, like, all the small states in the United States of America voted for a presidential candidate, and that number of people ended up being more than, I don't know, the few large states, then all the electoral college votes from the small states combined could end up adding up to be more than the few big states. So that's kind of how that could happen. I think what you are asking about specifically is the 2000 election with George W. Bush v. Al Gore. And we don't know for sure, because Al Gore conceded the election before we finished the recount, like how that turned out.
But this is the exact point of what I was talking about. And actually, it's a great question that we call in. The exact point that we hear all the time in different town halls that we do, same point. And I'm not to insult anybody's intelligence when I use the word complication, but it's a fact. The fact that you have to explain to people and the complexities of it and the breakdowns of superdelegates and delegates and the electoral college, I think people look at it, and it's kind of a crazy example, but for example, homecoming king grant, simple. We all know if you get 1,000 votes, one other person gets 872 votes, 1,000 votes win. And I think that's kind of what the general consensus of it is. But at the same time, when having to explain the electoral college and how it works, break it down with the districts, that's what confuses, and you're right, that's what confuses
people.
But
on many campuses, as an example, the homecoming king or queen may be elected by the popular vote, but the president or the VP of student affairs or someone else may nullify it. Having, you know, served as a college president, I can tell you that sometimes happens. I don't think it's that, again, I won't say I don't think it's that complicated. What I think is that the Constitution is flawed. And we know it's not one person, one vote.
Right.
It is we vote by states, and there's a whole history to that. And, you know, again, it could be wrong, it could be right. But ever since 2000, when Al Gore lost, and as you said, Kanisha, we don't know the whole
what
story.
What would have happened had he not conceded? Yeah.
But ever since 2000, people have said it's not one person, one vote. It's not fair. But there has been no impetus on the part of anyone to say, okay, so how do we go about changing that? As recently as 2004, people talked about third party and how come we don't have more third parties. But again, I think the Green Party has been woefully inadequate in expanding their brand. And I think, you know, in contrast to the family Family and Workers Party out of New York, mm-hmm. which has done a very good job in expanding their brand, certainly within that state. And so, you know, young people can be, anybody can be as impatient as they want to. I'm impatient. I've always been impatient. But that's not the point. The point is you have to take your pain of impatience and turn it into the power right. of social and economic change. And that doesn't happen overnight. There's no magic dust. And people have to be willing to put the grunt work in. Do you really think that when Rosa Parks did not get up, that people literally thought that overnight we were not going to have segregated buses? It took a year.
Right.
It took a year.
And let us say, when you talk about change, you know, it can be argued, and I said this earlier, that considering what is happening right now with Donald Trump and the Republican Party, and this is not a yay or a nay in favor of or against Donald Trump, but there is a revolution that is now happening within the Republican Party. Yeah. This is not your grandpa's Republican Party, okay? And so, well, depending on where your grandpa's from, let's say
no,
that.
No, don't do grandpa like that.
Okay, but
this is not anybody's grandpa.
But with that said, you know, there is a revolution that could be happening in the Republican Party, no matter who wins, and we may see the rise of other third party candidates, and not just when you're talking about presidential ballots, but you're talking about down ballots as well. Something that we certainly need to pay attention to and to think about. I need to take another break, and we need to say goodbye to our WHUR office, but this audience. But our conversation continues on SiriusXM channel 141, HUR Voices. Please join the conversation. We will continue to take your phone calls at 202-319-7810. Follow us, of course, on Twitter at DailyDrumWHUR using the hashtag Rock the Vote, WHUR. For my WHUR audience, Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation on SiriusXM Channel 141.